show. We write letters, we write letters. We put down in writing what is happening in our minds. Once it's on the paper, we feel better, we feel better. It's like some kind of clarity when the letter's done and signed.
Dear Andre.
Hello, I'm Martha Plimpton in today for Leonard Lopate. The Comet of 1812 created an incredible stir. It was said to be 50% larger than the sun and stunningly bright. Dave Malloy's new play, Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812, is similarly remarkable and currently dazzling audiences in a tent pitched in the meatpacking district of all places, made to look like a Russian nightclub. The play is a musical based on a portion of War and Peace and unfolds through and around the audience, who are happily eating and drinking the whole time. Natasha and Pierre plays until September 1st at Casino on West 13th Street. And I am so glad it brings composer and author Dave Malloy, director Rachel Chavkin, and actor Blake DeLong here today. Welcome.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
Hi, Rachel. Oh, good. You're there.
I am indeed.
Okay, good. So, Dave, first of all, I saw the show the other night, and it's really phenomenal.
Thank you.
But you look familiar. But you were you in it?
It depends on when you saw it. I played Pierre
up until
2 weeks ago.
Yes, I think I saw you playing Pierre.
I saw one of my last shows. Well, hello.
I think I did. And you were marvelous.
Thank you.
You or the guy playing it.
they're all marvelous,
if it wasn't you look very similar.
Well, my understudy was cast because he's the same size look as me. Yeah.
You wouldn't be the first person to mistake Luke.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Dave,
he's also a very good actor and singer, too.
You're both excellent. Dave, I understand this idea came to you while you were working as a pianist on a cruise ship.
It's true.
So what what kind of music were you playing on this cruise ship?
I was in the show band. So I was in like a big band, a 7-piece big band. Mostly we played like, you know, Glenn Miller tunes and stuff that, you know, the people would dance to. And then we also did like the visiting artists. So we played for like ventriloquists and impersonators and comedians.
Right.
And we had a couple of like big Broadway review numbers as well.
This puts you in mind of Tolstoy.
Exactly. Well, so I had a lot of free time, because if you're a musician on a cruise ship, you only play at night. So during the days, you know, you just have nothing but free time and you're stuck in a boat. So there was lots of reading time. And I had a girlfriend on land. And so we decided one of the ways we would stay together is to read one of the most giant books ever written together.
War and Peace.
Read War and Peace together. Exactly.
Very nice.
And I got made fun of a lot because I was like walking around the cruise ship with my giant book. And
why
else
did
was
you
just
choose War and Peace? I guess it's romantic.
Well, at the time, we had both just read Anna Karenina. And we also just like the kind of, you know, the challenge of it. Of it being this book that notoriously is one of the longest and most boring books ever written.
Right, right.
But which is not the case at all. It's quite.
So, being that it is a long book, you couldn't exactly put the entire show up. So what section of the book is the musical taken
from? We just do it's just a tiny sliver that comes just about exactly halfway through the novel. It's a 70-page sliver, which is basically about the two main characters. Pierre is having a big existential life crisis at the time, and then Natasha, who's much younger, is engaged to her fiancé Andre, who's off at war, and while she's waiting for him, she gets seduced by a rogue named Anatole.
Right. Yeah. So, and most people reading War and Peace, if they visualize it being dramatized at all, they would imagine it being very cinematic because it's very huge. So you chose this specific sliver of the story to sort of make that, to preclude having to do an entire you don't have to do the war.
Well, and, you know, actually, it's funny, Rachel and I, the director and I, we've talked about someday we will do a war section, but we'd have to do it like on Governor's Island or some giant field somewhere,
right,
to really get the scope.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised, because you also did a musical version of Beowulf.
Yes.
what are the musical elements of a story that make it conducive to turning it into a musical? What do you hear when you're reading something? Do you hear music starting to play in your mind as you're reading?
A little bit. I mean, for Comet, definitely the Russian culture was a big part of it. I grew up Latvian, so you know, I grew up around this kind of very heavily singing and drinking culture, Slavic culture. And in Tulsa, there's all these scenes where these, you know, aristocracy characters go out into the countryside and have fun with the Russian peasants, and like you hear the guitars and the accordions, and so all of that was very much a part of the musical palette that I was drawing from.
And how much of Tolstoy's language is in the play?
Quite a bit. Quite a bit. A lot of the lyrics are actually word for word Tolstoy. I mostly used one of the very first English translations of it by Maud is the name. But looked at a couple other translations as well and sometimes kind of triangulated between the three to write lyrics.
That must have been incredibly challenging.
No, it's so easy.
It's not your average libretto. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It was nice, though, because I had a book writer who wouldn't argue with me.
Right.
He's dead. Yeah.
That's very convenient for you.
Yeah, it's very convenient.
So Rachel and Blake, had you read the book? I'll start with you, Blake, since you're here. Rachel, I'll come to you in 2 seconds, I promise. had you read the book before your involvement in this production?
No, I had read Anna Karenina, but about 10 years before I started working on this show. And I'm still only about at page 800 of War and Peace. I'm fighting the good fight there.
You think pages are tough.
Yeah.
By the time your run is over, do you think you'll have finished the book?
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
And Rachel, what about you? Were you familiar with War and Peace before?
I was, yeah. I'd read it in high school, although I don't think I absorbed really a shred of the philosophy or kind of any of the underpinnings of it. And so in 2009, when Dave and I first began talking about this project, I kind of went back and picked it up immediately. And it was, it was totally like reading it for the first time. And I was so struck by how romantic it was and actually how funny it was. I think that was the thing that I just didn't pick up on, was just Tolstoy's tone when he's talking about the decadence of Moscow society, which, of course, kind of at this moment in the book when the period our play is drawn from is right on the brink of total annihilation.
Total annihilation. And yet you do manage to bring some really nice humor out of the story.
Well, we try.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
Rachel, was that, I mean, you say you connected with Tolstoy's sort of hidden humor. Was that important to you?
Definitely. Well, I think humor and sort of just the joy of theatricality and kind of the being cheeky with the live presence in the room is something that is a big hallmark of both Dave's and my work. And so that felt really important in terms of allowing the audience to both kind of stand at a distance from the melodrama, because it's such a sweeping, romantic, classic story of this girl getting her heart smashed. And so from, a contemporary 2013 audience, we are going to have, bring a lot of judgment to that. And I think we both wanted to create space for the audience to kind of laugh at the sweep of it, and then at the same time ultimately release into the romanticism of it. And both elements felt really important, and that's sort of goes into the design of the show as well, with the period costumes, but the really contemporary setting, and so it sort of permeates throughout the production.
I'm speaking with Dave Malloy, who created the new show Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812, actor Blake DeLong, who plays Andre and Andre's father, and with director Rachel Chavkin, and I'm Martha Plimpton, in today for Leonard Lopate. So, Rachel, the staging is really inventive and compelling, and we'll have to explain to people part of why it's so inventive and compelling. You're challenged by the fact that you're staging the actors and the action sort of within and without the audience. They're there eating dinner, sort of spread in amongst you, and the action is happening sometimes even at their tables. You must have needed to sort of make this a collaborative effort with your actors in order to make that happen. Is that the case?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, first, Mimi Leanne and our set designer and I kind of sat down and sort of, with various versions of the ground plan, sort of finger walked through where we might put stuff, just to make sure every element of the space, including like the angle of a given staircase, was in line with what we needed it to be. And then with the actors, the way we sort of approach staging a scene is I would kind of lay out what the general game was of the space. So, for example, there's that scene when Natasha very early on goes to her fiance's house, the Volkonsky's house, and she has this really disastrous meeting with his family, including his father, played by Blake. And I said, you know, I think this is going to happen as, like, the worst dinner party ever, and we're going to do it at an audience member's table. so we kind of got that basic idea right. in place. But then my actresses, you know, began figuring out when and where they wanted to leapfrog to. And then Blake, of course, spent probably several hours of tech figuring out sort of what the gag was with the stairs and
right.
how to come down and exactly how to time out that entrance.
Well, Blake, you're playing... Both you're playing two roles, both Andre and Andre's father. So did you have to audition for both?
Oh yes. Oh yes, I did.
They're very different parts, though, and I have to admit that I did not recognize, this is a compliment, of course, that it was you both
Thank you.
Times. How are you finding that?
It's great. You know, from an acting standpoint, from the moment I got word that I was going to do this job, I felt like, you know, it was kind of like a pair of aces, you know, because you get to play basically opposite personalities who kind of their inner experience converges by the end of the play.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a cool journey to go on, you
right.
know, every night.
Right.
And the building of moments like Rachel was just describing was just a wild experience from an acting standpoint, you know, realizing, well, okay, I'm going to come in here and there's going to be some people here and I guess I'm going to take their drink. I don't know.
Yeah.
and it varies so
yeah,
wildly
yeah,
from
and
night to night.
Exactly.
Does it vary from night to night?
Sure.
I mean, do the audiences change in terms of their vibe and
oh, yeah.
their level of inebriation?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Absolutely. And I've you know. Now I've gotten some pretty fail-safe tricks for breaking the ice
mm-hmm.
if there is some ice to be broken. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's been a great experience.
Dave, most people may find the names in Tolstoy's War and Peace a little bit confusing
oh,
because
sure.
they've got names and then they've got nicknames and
yeah.
so you found sort of an interesting way to help the people in the audience through that. Describe
yes.
what
I,
that
actually,
is.
I actually like to describe so the opening song of the show, which we just call the prologue, is just very much a song that goes through the characters one by one and introduces you, you know, to them with a very simple descriptor. So Natasha is young, Sonia is good, Maria is old school.
Mm-hmm.
Just to kind of lay out, and there's a family tree in the program as well that people are told to refer to, that this is all in your program, is one of the lyrics.
Yes, I found that very helpful. Thank
and
you.
And it's hilarious because that song was actually written out of spite. Because we did some developmental workshops for this show, and in both of the first two workshops, that song did not exist. Instead,
mm-hmm.
the very first song was Pierre's opening song, which is how the section of the novel begins, and it's just Pierre having this existential crisis.
Right.
So we just kind of launched people right into it, and like the overwhelming note from all the workshops was Pelion's. It really took me a long time to figure out who was who, and I didn't. Oh, they're brother and sister. I didn't realize that. And I got so sick of hearing that note
mm-hmm.
that I said, okay, fine. I'm going to write it out as explicitly as possible,
right.
You know, and lay it all. And it ended up being
But the
one,
song
yeah,
is great. That's a really great song.
It ended up being one of the best songs of the show.
Yeah, I think so. I read that this was a commission from Ars Nova. So
mm-hmm.
How did that work out? What's the history of that?
So Ars Nova came and saw Beowulf, which is a
right.
show I did here about 4 years ago now. I was running at Abrams Art Center. So they came and saw that show and just invited me in to have a chat with them. And then I did a concert there, like a one-night concert of a bunch of my works.
Mm-hmm.
And they enjoyed that, and I enjoyed them. And so then I became their composer in residence.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah, for 2011, I think it was.
And, it's nice for a composer to have a home for
It's
a
really
while.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. They're super supportive. And part of the residency was an open-ended commission. So they said, you know, do whatever you want. And
mm-hmm.
I said, well, I kind of have this idea in the back of my head to do an opera based on War and Peace.
And
Ars Nova is like a tiny, like a 99-seat
yeah.
house.
It's really small.
Yeah. And I was like, I expected them to say, no way. Let's do some, like maybe a two-character, three-character
right.
thing. But they were amazing. Like from the get-go, they were just so supportive. And like, absolutely, yes, we're going to do everything we can to realize this vision. And
they're awesome
they're
over
fantastic.
There.
They're
very.
Fantastic.
They take nice risks. Rachel, at what point in the development of this did you get involved? Were you there from the beginning or what?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, Dave and I had begun talking about this project in 2009 when we were working together at Vassar College. And so in 2011 is when I began talking with Ars Nova about the project. Dave had introduced me to Jason Hegan, the artistic director there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I directed both workshops that we did while there and then, of course, the full production in the fall.
And why did you guys decide to do this in a nightclub?
Well, it was kind of, for me, there were two experiences that I had. One was actually with the show Beowulf. So before Beowulf started in San Francisco, and then we transferred to New York. And before we transferred to New York, we did like a one last night showing in San Francisco at Berkeley Rep, and it was fantastic. But then the following night, we actually had the opportunity to do it in like this weird, crazy artist loft space. And we had no time to tech it. There was no set. So we basically crammed the whole band on this tiny stage, and there was no room left on the stage. So the actors had to just go into the audience and perform it, totally improvising the blocking and everything.
Wow.
And it was so much fun. And the audience was all like young San Francisco hipsters, and everyone was drinking out of brown paper bags. And so that like immersive quality was so fun. And then I had an experience in Russia, in Moscow. I went to a nightclub very similar to the club that we try to recreate.
So Blake, is it fun doing dinner theater? I know that most actors dread it, but this is a little different, isn't it?
It's definitely different.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. It comes with a lot of challenges.
Mm-hmm,
but,
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's cool.
And how do you hear people like asking, pass the borscht, or your... I felt the audience was very polite when I was there. I don't want to make it seem like they weren't.
Our audiences have really graduated along a learning curve in a great way.
That's great.
Since we opened.
I've been speaking with Dave Malloy, who created the new musical Natasha, Pierre, and the Great Comet of 1812, actor Blake DeLong, with the director Rachel Chavkin. The show runs through September 1st at Casino. Ticket and location information is available on the Leonard Lopate Show page at WNYC.org. It has been a pleasure speaking with you all today, and we're going out with the song Sonia Alone from the show. Thank you again for coming.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much.
She waits by the window.